Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Hey, don't touch that dial. It's time to stop the violence towards women and take back the night. This is KXCU, and we'll be here with you for the lectures, the workshops, and the rallies all week long.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 11, Take Back the Night. And now, here are your hosts with the 411 on this episode, Tara Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hi. Before you start, I got some site business.
Oh, okay.
Number one, buy shirts at clarkwear.com. They're good. Number two, buy an ad right here on this podcast, previously.tv/ads. $50 for a personal ad, $100 for a business ad. Go there. Fill that form out. We'll talk. Now on to the show.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I usually skip over the bit right after the credits because it's usually just
B-roll.
The credits and people biking or Brandon stupidly running while wearing two pairs of shorts.
Yes, true.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed that inappropriately cheery clip as though it's a monster truck event.
You're not going to get raped. Rape, rape this Sunday. Like, take back the night.
10,000 pounds of rape, rape, rape. Like,
also,
change the tone just a little.
No one organizing this event thought Take Back the Night Week was a terrible name for an event. Like, it's just really confusing. It's like the curse of the mummy's
Will
curse or whatever that
is. Ghost?
Yeah, it's whatever. We'll get into all the ways this plot line is terrible and is irresponsible and bad and poorly handled and shitty. But first, our C story. No one cares about poetry. Brenda.
The Sarah D. Bunting story. No one cares about poetry.
So Brenda is shitting the bed in her poetry class and bitching about it to an extra obnoxious Dylan in clip number two.
Clip number two.
Dr. Petty could have been speaking Martian just now for all I know. Like, biographia literaria. What is that?
It is a condition which develops when you spend the entire semester running around with the Stuart Carson.
Who was that?
That was Dylan doing his dumb Freud impression. So terrible.
Wrong.
Oh,
that's
Jesus.
Wrong.
So bad.
I do love her legitimately offended. Biographia literaria. What is that? Like, yeah, seriously. Like,
sometimes cigars. Just a cigar. Gar.
But also, I didn't tell you to take a poetry class. I never did, and I was an English major. Like, you didn't. You did this to yourself, dummy. Anyway.
Excuse me, where do we get to the limericks?
Also, Dylan, it's not the same as Psychopathia Sexualis. Like, not every book with two names is the same.
No.
Go back to reading Kerouac, Mo.
Also note that he seems to be talking
these about monster trucks are on the road. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was impressed and surprised. Good job, Dave. Note that Dylan seems to be talking about Stuart in the past tense, as we discussed last week. There's a lot of confusion about what actually is going on with her relationship with him. Anyway, Brenda claims she doesn't connect with romantic poetry, like it's not there for you to relate to, dumbass. But anyway, Dylan offers to tutor her, and she very happily accepts. He also closes this offer, and you can see it in the visual aids because I made a gif of like doing a cute like finger tweak under her chin of like quit leading her on. Like, are you gonna hook back up with her or not? Like, quit flirting with her like this. It's not nice because she still loves him. Anyway, because it's Take Back the Night week, Brenda and her newly raised consciousness go to poetry class later and accuse the narrator of, to his coy mistress, of being a date rapist. I don't even know where to start with that, so I'm just going to leave it there. If you want to read this poem and decide for yourself, you can Google it. Anyway, later Brenda changes her mind and agrees with Dylan's interpretation of the poem. No one cares! Moving on to the B story. No one has integrity but Brendan. Brandon, rather, sorry. Lucinda is lecturing at this Take Back the Night event when Brandon wanders in. Corey is proud of her, but that won't last. He reminds Brandon about the dinner at their place tonight. Brandon continues to try and get out of this casual invitation, now pretends he doesn't know that it was tonight, but Corey is willing to do whatever it takes to maintain Deshaun's eligibility. Then Brandon is pissy at the Walsh house about going to dinner with Corey and Lucinda, and no one knows what his problem is in clip number three.
Jeez, back in our time, dinner with a professor was a major perk. Meant you had arrived.
Still does.
Well, if any of you would like to arrive in my place, please.
Oh, I would love to if I could meet your professor's wife. Donna said she gave the most amazing talk to kick off Take Back the Night week.
It was on courtship rituals. Kind of a hobby of hers.
So barfy. we also get a preview of how gross the A plot is going to be in clip number four.
Well, are you two going to day rape seminar tomorrow?
Yeah, I have some woman in a crew cut labeling me a potential rapist. I don't think so.
Fuck you.
Little male backlash here.
What are you talking about? I mean, they did not even allow men to take part in this thing until last year.
Bro, you should really consider going. There were a lot of babes there.
Brandon.
Brandon?
Sorry.
Fuck all men. Yes, Dave. Oh,
I wonder if this episode was the inspiration for the Charlie picks up women at the abortion clinic from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode.
Yes.
It feels really similar.
That is a great point. Oh my God, though, so much offensive about that clip. It's really remarkable how economically they fit in all the troglodytic attitudes about women. Oh my God.
That's a good word.
Oh my God.
I mean, a woman in a crew cut, like, really?
There'd be a lot of babes there.
Babes. You're from Vancouver.
Babs, babs, babs.
Anyway. Babs and bounds, babs, babs, babs.
So Brandon leaves and Cindy grossly makes this smile of like, can you believe he's so incorrigible? Like, no, that's
what a
not
scamp.
The...
You raised that.
You raised
Kill
it.
Kill yourself.
Seriously, but you can see her dumb face in the visual aids because I made a picture. Anyway, pretty sure they got a smaller table at the Randall Nicholson complex for the two extra people. You can see that in the visual aids too, because if you saw the other episode where Brandon went over for dinner, I'm pretty sure it was a long table. Anyway. Lucinda begs them to stop talking about basketball, and then this occurs, clip number five.
You should study the game, Lucinda. You'd enjoy it more.
Oh, stop the presses. You're telling somebody to study?
Well, that must be your influence. How is he as a teacher?
Difficult, man. Brandon is hard.
Yeah, so I've noticed.
Guys, I mean, your husband is right there, like, do you have an arrangement or not? Because if
and
not
even if you
really...
do have an arrangement, like, up the entendre to even a whole one. Never mind a double entendre. Like, can we just get one? This is like 0.4.
Yes.
Fuck.
Also, Deshaun did not volunteer to be part of your foreplay, so just don't. But anyway, you can see in the visual aids that Deshaun totally clocks this interaction between the two of them because I made a gif. In the kitchen, Brandon hisses at Lucinda to quit flirting with him in front of her husband. She tells him there's nothing to it, and he says, am I being a hick? Did we miss a scene where he decided he does want to fool around with her after all? Like, the change of his attitude to being nice to her is weird and not congruent with their last interaction in the least. But anyway, she invites him to fuck her on the kitchen table with her husband on the other side of the wall, and he declines, but not very passionately. And later, Lucinda finds Brandon doing chest presses in the gym and tells him he could be pressing her. Flirting ensues, and Deshaun walks in on it just as it gets to groping, and I made a gif of that too. Sorry, not sorry. Brandon is then trying to tutor Deshaun, but Deshaun doesn't give a fuck and turns on a basketball game in the middle of the session, leading to this in clip number six.
See you later, man. I got better things to do.
Don't I know it?
I saw you two at the gym today, aching to get busy.
What are you talking about?
You and Lucinda. I saw her moving on you at dinner last night, too.
I don't know what you think you saw.
Oh, man. That look in her eye said you two are doing the sweet thing.
Not the way Brandon does it.
I'll ask Professor if he saw it, too.
Sorry, did you just say doing the sweet thing?
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah.
No, just kidding.
Deshaun, you better start spending a little more time studying and a lot less time fantasizing if you're going to pass this test.
That's okay. We both know you're going to pass it for me.
You're dreaming.
Well, in my dream, you give me a big, fat B.
You said you were kidding, right?
Do it look like I'm kidding?
Deshaun!
Oh my god, Hardell 2016.
Love. Completely. The next
since Brandon is a big fat B. Nicely.
Yes. Big fat C would have also worked anyway the next day. Or later, Brandon goes to Deshaun's room with his sternest face and tries to lawyer him in clip number 7.
Last time I was in here, things got a little confusing, at least for me. I don't want there to be any misunderstanding.
Who does?
Straight ahead, then. I want to wish you luck on your midterm.
Straight ahead? I meant it, Walsh. You take my test, or I'll tell Randall you're doing his wife.
There's nothing going on.
Man, I saw what I saw. Don't insult me.
Okay. Something started. When I found out she was married to Randall, it stopped. No harm, no foul. You want to tell Randall? Go ahead. The worst he can do is flunk me.
You don't understand, man. I can't do the test.
If you fail, I'll keep working with you, man. You might miss a few games, but you can still pass the semester.
I can't miss games. Coach said he'll lose me from the squad. You're fooling with my life, man.
I can't take the test for you. And even if I could, this academic stuff isn't gonna go away. You gotta deal with it.
No, you gotta deal with it. You gotta help me out, man. What can I do if I can't play ball? Tell me that, huh?
I'm sorry. I gotta go.
Time of integrity doesn't feel sorry for you.
I think that was the remote.
I'll talk. I'll mess you up. You buying yourself a world of hurt.
Brandon's such a badass. He just walks right out.
All right. First of all, close the door behind you. Second of all, yep. In the previous scene, you do not shut off a man's TV.
No.
Or woman's.
Rude.
Without his or her permission. Mm-hmm. That is a dick move.
Yep.
You don't live there.
Nope.
It's TV.
Yep.
It's better than you. Third of all, the sad thing is this sort of like, this is still a problem at the
yes,
college level.
It
this
is.
Like tutors being assigned to take tests for athletes and the NCAA being like,
new phone who
really
did.
Strict about they're not accepting gifts and stuff like that. Like this could have been an interesting storyline, but instead it's all hung. None of it is hung on Deshaun, who is awesome and has charisma and is cute.
Yep.
And instead it's all pegged to Brandon being Integron 2000. Like no one fucking cares. And like having integrity and having a self-righteous streak, the width of your entire self are not the same thing. And I hate him, and I wish he'd fall into a beehive and die.
He makes, so you can hear it in that clip, so much braying that I had to do a 4-pack of bray faces. He's really horrible.
And that is really quite restrained of you, because there were like 17
I know.
Bray opportunities for visual aids.
Yeah.
You are welcome, world. Mm-hmm. We restrained ourselves.
Yeah. He's just such a cock. Like there's, I mean, how many more ways do we have to say it? I guess we'll find out as long as he's on the show, because it never stops. Speaking of never stopping, Brandon goes to the gym in a state and tells Lucinda about the interaction he just had in clip number 8.
So he knows. He says he's going to tell your husband unless I take a sociology test for him.
So take the stupid test. It was probably the deal anyway.
What deal?
Brandon, you are so naive. Why do you think my husband's being so nice to you? Why do you think the exam's a take-home, for God's sake?
I don't know what to say.
Say you'll stop being a baby and start playing your part.
Meaning run around behind your husband's back and write Deshaun's test for him?
Well, yeah, it would make things a hell of a lot easier.
Sorry, I kind of like doing things the hard way.
Hey, Brennan. You want some advice?
No.
I don't know a lot about improv, but I know this. You're always supposed to yes and. Yes.
Oh, God. I mean, it is terrible for all the reasons that Sarah just said, but also, like, I kind of love that she's like, who cares? Like, she doesn't care if Deshaun gets an education. Like, in, you know.
Well, and seriously, how does Brandon, the former sports editor, not understand from the get that this is the deal, that that's what yep. he is for, mm-hmm. is to take the test?
Yeah. I mean, if it's a take home and it's like, well, whatever, who cares? This doesn't go anywhere. Why are we digging into it? Anyway, let's wrap it up for Brandon. He's so upset that he goes straight home and packs, and then by chance finds an old photo of Emily in his drawer. Brenda enters and he tells her and her nipples that he's going camping.
God.
The shot of this is literally in my folder of pictures for this episode, nipples.jpg, because they are so insistent. Like, they should have gotten their own billing. It's actually crazy. But thank God that's it for Brandon in this episode.
There's a SAG card joke here. But thank you.
But before we move on to our A story, first we have a message for Fiona.
It is Fiona's birthday. Fiona lives in Minnesota, native land of Brandon and Brenda Wash, and we've composed a list of Beverly Hills 90210 related activities she might enjoy on her natal day.
Well, she loves curling, the kind with brooms and stones, and would love it even more if one of the stones knocked over Brandon while he's trying to mac on an Olympic hopeful figure skater.
As who among us would not? She also loves hiking state parks, and we think she would really enjoy scraping Brandon's fingers off that ledge and watching him plunge to his, well, bruise, not death, because she's not a monster, A, and B, he was about 8 inches above the next rock down anyway.
Fiona is a Pinot Grigio connoisseur, and when Mel Silver gives her some, she'll know how to pace herself and not get kicked out of the prom for booting.
And when she's kicking back with a trashy romance novel, we hope she'll pick one in which the love interests actually love and are interested in one another, unlike a certain Dylan and Kelly we might mention.
To Fiona, the smart but cooler than Andrea boogie boarding birthday girl, from all of us, and again with this, happy birthday. I'm so sorry.
Happy birthday.
I'm so sorry that your birthday wish has to come before this festival of offensiveness.
You should take back your birthday.
Oh, God.
This is not cute at all.
So sorry. All right. Let's just do it. We can't not. Our A plot. No one knows how to take back. No, we have to. No one knows how to take back the night. So it's Take Back the Night week, as we know. I hope the attendance at this nature film with jokey comments about mating rituals is mandatory, because there are certainly more productive ways Kelly and Donna could be spending their time other than comparing the animals in this film to their horny boyfriends. At the Keg House, John gives Steve 5 phone messages from Laura, all from the last 24 hours. John orders Steve to get rid of her so they can quit taking his messages, and then she calls because she has no dignity. Laura. All right, so then Steve decides he has to bite the bullet and decides to meet Laura at the Peach Pit, where everybody he knows is all the time, as if there's not one other restaurant in Los Angeles he could have met her at. Steve is dumb. Also, they only had one restaurant set, apparently. Anyway, Laura and her choker are meeting Nat. She does this thing when Steve comes in where she gets into the booth and then she, like, slides over to give him room to sit next to her, which he doesn't, and then she has to sadly slide back. You want to see it? Yeah. I made a GIF. Not that we don't already know, but Laura is not so much with the dignity in clip number 9.
I'm sorry about all the phone calls. I just kept thinking about you.
It's no big deal, really.
Didn't you think about me a little bit, too?
Yeah, and Laura, I have something I need to tell you.
Oh, something good, I hope.
Really?
Laura, I have a girlfriend. Her name is Celeste, and I know I should have told you this before we went out. Hey, come on. Come on. Try not to take it so hard.
What do you expect? You pressured me into sleeping with you, and now you're dumping me.
Look, I know this won't come out the way I mean it, but Couldn't we just be friends?
The other night you didn't want to just be friends.
There are other guys at the keg house I could introduce you to.
I don't want other guys.
Look, I'm sorry. I wish there was something I could say, something I could do.
You can go to hell.
I mean, at least she recovered by the end, but oof.
Read a room.
Seriously,
not
something...
the rubber one that you live in. This one.
Something good, I hope. No.
Uh-huh.
First conversation of your life, Laura. Anyway, then
did
she
the
has
beach ball you imprinted on not tell you about how if you called the guy 19 times and he didn't call you back, probably not into it.
Yeah. And then she stomps out under like Nat's judgmental eye, which again, Steve, any other place in the greater Los Angeles area, any other. Anyway, so then proving once again why Celeste is better for Steve in every other way, she has just brought him a 40% off cashmere blazer from work before Kelly and John Sears drift in. For all the buildup of Kelly and John Sears' first date, by the way, we don't get to see whatever they did, so okay. Celeste and Kelly go to the bathroom together because TV, and also maybe so no keg brothers assault them when they're just trying to pee, and the guys have this exchange in clip number 10.
I'd give anything to be a fly on the wall of that bathroom.
Well, it's quite an ambition.
I tell you what you hear. Kelly'd be saying how tonight she closes the deal. She was giving me the vibe all through dinner.
Man, why don't you cut her a break? Is that all you think about?
Yeah, I know you used to have a thing for her, Sanders, but come on, she's into me now.
Oh, of course. But does she know about that bunch of girls you have on the side?
Oh, like you told Celeste about, what's her name? Love Bunny?
No, I didn't. But I did tell Laura about Celeste, and believe me, it would have been an education for both of you to see how hurt she was.
Oh, I get it. You hurt Laura, so I shouldn't sleep with Kelly. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Sears, this is not a game. People do get bruised, you know.
Thank you for sharing, Mr. Sensei.
Steve, could you listen to yourself? You don't get to be lecturing other people about sexual rectitude when what you just did was dump the girl you slept with and had no intention of continuing to see. Whatever, dude.
Yeah. While also cheating. Whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, John leads Kelly meaningfully to his bedroom and Steve is upset. And in that room, John and Kelly make out. He wants to have sex, but she tells him she doesn't. And then this occurs, clip 11.
What, have you been talking to Sanders or something?
No, it's not a conspiracy that I don't want to sleep with you.
Well, something's going on. I'm a senior. I'm in Keg House. I've got girls lined up in the hallway taking numbers, and you make me feel like I've got the plague.
What do you want me to do? It just doesn't feel right, okay?
Feel right? Jeez, what's with the Snow White act? Come on, I was there. I know what you're really about. What do you think? I'm hanging around with you for your brilliant freshman repartee?
You haven't changed a bit, have you?
Kelly.
You do not know the first thing about what it's like to care for somebody. I can't believe I was actually falling for you.
If this is how you fall for someone, you got a lot to learn.
Why don't you find somebody else to teach it to?
Brilliant freshman repartee. That's a good line.
Yeah. I mean, well done on the door slam that knocked the dartboard off the back of the door.
Yes.
Got that one on the first take, I assume. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, one of the many instances where, and John Sears is about to turn into like a Grotto for real, mm-hmm. indefensible
yes.
level.
Yes.
But now he's still at the point where I'm like, yeah. Like, he's a dick, but we're all thinking it.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, then, making things grosser, Kelly goes straight to her bodyguard in clip number 12.
Dylan, I did not tell you this, so you would run over there and punch him out.
Because he couldn't, I assume? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's going to be a handbreaker.
Yeah, I'm not
good
sure.
Good luck.
But anyway, God, so stupid. Anyway, Dylan is furious that he has no pylons to kick about this, and Kelly has to... It's
or pots to smash.
Yes, pots to smash. What else is he? Yeah, right. Anyway.
Other people's scotch to throw into the side of the house.
Yes.
Forget that one.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't.
No. And then Kelly tells him the real reason that she is there in clip 13.
You know, if this had happened 3 years ago, I probably would have stayed with him even after what he said.
I'm glad it's not 3 years ago. I'm getting it together.
I hope so. And if I am starting to get more inner strength or whatever, I think maybe it's because you're the first guy who ever took me seriously.
So Kelly got her self-worth from another guy. Great message. Show for Take Back the Night episode. What?
One who has hated her very evidently since the minute they went public with their relationship a year ago.
Uh-huh. That's the one. Whatever.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. Kelly then hints around that she wants to get back together, but he doesn't really take the bait. Nothing happens. So then John is hitting on some girl in not great French when Dylan shows up and gets between them and orders John to leave Kelly alone. They do not come to physical blows, as Kelly requested, and also because that would be a matter of John Sears leaving a greasy stain on the quad. And then,
well, yeah, just insert in your mind an animated gif of one of many scenes with Edward Furlong like trying to do high fives with the Terminator in T2. Like, he's like, oh, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it doesn't work. He's a giant strong machine.
Yep. And then Steve finds Kelly to warn her that John Sears is a pig. He's sorry he didn't say anything sooner, but John saw them talking and uh-oh. And then at the rally, the girls are sitting together. Andrea introduces Laura from her chemistry
in
class.
In bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, Leslie situates us in clip 14.
Hello, everyone. I am Leslie Sumner from Alpha House and the Panhellenic Council. We'll be splitting up into smaller groups a little later on the lawn, but first I would like to introduce Angela Rhodes from the Student Senate, just so we're all in sync.
Okay, this is such a dumb thing to clip, but every time I've ever watched this episode, which is a lot, I have wondered why that speech? Why is it in
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I don't... Why are you leading this?
Why
is Angela there? What is the in sync part?
I don't...
Did you need to give this speech to someone else so you didn't accidentally say something untoward?
Why
are there bleachers? Why is this happening during the day? Why?
Why are we getting this much logistics? Why? This is like Burbank Airport planning all over again. Like, why?
Exactly. I have a piece of paper. That's swell.
I know. Anyway, then it's time for Angela Rhodes from the Student Senate to talk about the Chicano Cultural Project, just kidding, about date rape in clip 15.
How many of you have ever been burglarized? Raise your hands. In a dorm room or your home?
Does having your purse stolen count?
Shut up, Donna.
Sure. Welcome to the club. Take a look. You're not alone. Okay. How many of you have ever been held up at gunpoint?
Finally, Dylan, we're here to see this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I know this is a sensitive question, but how many of you have ever been a victim of date rape?
High school, it was practically a weekend ritual.
If you look at the hands going up and down, you realize that date rape is a little different. See, if someone holds a gun to your head, you know it. But if you're date raped, maybe you're not sure. So let's talk about that today.
Why did Donna have to interject? Like, there's so much stupid in this moment too. I mean, it is a good message, and it's true that this is a crime that there's a lot of doubt about whether it happened, but like, why it has to be presented so idiotically. And like, why Brenda has to be like, good thing Dylan's not here to see this. Like, why? I don't know. Or
yeah,
too,
I mean,
too
is
bad
that to do
not.
With his gun? Like, unless he held up the peach pit, leave him out of it. Who cares?
I think it's referred to, like, him getting held up at gunpoint by the carjacker. Remember the, what?
Oh, right. Okay.
That started the gun thing in the first place. Anyway, moving on to the small groups that they're breaking into. Donna tells her small group about how much David pressures her to have sex with him. Kelly tells a story about how Jimmy the cowboy tried to date rape her at the costume party. Nana's got thoughts in clip 16.
I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but I'm worried that we're assigning women a very outdated, very passive role here.
Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that men rape women, not the other way around.
I know that.
But you know what? It's like if I get drunk and I run somebody over, that's my fault. But if I get drunk and I decide to have sex with some guy and wish later I hadn't, we're saying that it's his fault.
Really, Andrea, men do get women drunk.
Excuse me, Phil Donahue, but women can decide what they will and will not drink. For a guy who claims to be a feminist, you sure put me in my place, didn't you?
I was arguing the feminist point of view.
No, I was arguing the feminist point of view. You were trying to make me look stupid.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll never contradict you again.
I mean, first of all, hair is making Andrea look plenty stupid without any fucking help from Dan Rubin.
Yeah, but also, I'll never contradict you, and I fuck you. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I mean, I do think that she was wrong in their argument, but that's not how you get out of a woman telling you what she thinks, to just be like, they're there, whatever. Like, fuck off.
Although, maybe the Phil Donahue reference, he was just like, well, I'll be getting nowhere with this. So.
True.
He doesn't even know what year it is.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, to both of them. Anyway, then Laura is asking Kelly how soon she figured out that her guy was a rapist. Kelly says she can tell. Sorry, Kelly can tell that Laura has something on her mind and invites her to talk. Laura acts like she's okay, but when Kelly presses her, she agrees. And so then Laura tells Kelly the story of the guy who, according to her, made her have sex with him. Kelly tells her that she can report him to the police, or failing that, to name him and shame him at the rally. So then Kelly brings Laura to talk to Leslie and Angela, and they urge her to tell them this guy's name, and she works up to it in clip 17.
He's from Cake House. That's where it happened. He poured some vodka or something. It was the last thing that I wanted. Anyway, we were making out, which was nice, I mean, because I really liked this guy. Before, I mean, I liked him before. Somehow, my dress got unbuttoned. And before I knew it, he had pulled my dress down completely and he pushed me back onto the bed. I tried to get him to stop, but he wouldn't. And I tried to push him off, but he was too heavy. I begged him to stop. Finally, I just said, if you're gonna do this, please at least use a condom. Is that date rape?
It's exactly what it is. But don't be afraid to call it that.
Look, Laura, if this guy is from Cake House, then we all know other people that he can hurt.
Yeah, you know, guys like that, they don't do this just once. It's a pattern.
I just need more time.
Look, we have some time before the rally. I'm sure you'll be ready to say his name by then.
I don't...
What?
Yeah, why is that part of this? Like, I mean,
yeah, it's not testimony. Like, stop. Right. Like, what? You're not prepping her for court, mm-hmm. is A. B, I don't know, at our Take Back the Night rallies, you didn't... Like, you said what you wanted to say,
mm-hmm.
and you weren't required. Like, no one's going to check. Yeah, this is weird.
It's very weird.
I mean, it's only to drag it out so that Kelly thinks it's John Sears that right. she's talking about. And we know it's Steve, but we also know what happened. And it's not how Laura said and blah, blah, blah. They're just like dragging it out longer and also trying to, I guess, make us think about how there's two sides to every story, but mm-hmm. like we saw this story already.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, shut up, show.
Moving on to, yeah. So afterward, we get Kelly and Laura one-on-one, and this happens in clip 18.
Leslie's right, you know. If he's just going to do this again,
maybe he won't.
It's who I think it is. You can count on it. Look, you don't have to protect him anymore. I know it was John Sears.
I don't even know John. It was this guy. His name is Steve Sanders.
Steve? Wait, this has got to be a mistake.
You heard them. It was rape.
No, but I know him, and he's not like that.
He did everything exactly like I said he did.
Laura, I am begging you. You cannot go to that march and tell everybody that Steve raped you.
I can't believe you. You promised me that you would stick by me through thick and thin, and now you're trying to tell me that it didn't even happen?
Look, at least let me talk to him first.
You're doing exactly what men have always done when a woman finds the strength to come forward. You're as bad as he is.
Laura. I mean... The thing about this whole thing is that, like, as Sarah just said, we do know what happened and, like, that Laura is rewriting history because she was hurt by Steve. But, like, the number of rape stories that have been on this show is now three. So there's the Kelly, Cowboy Jimmy date rape at the Halloween party. And then there's Jill's story about stranger rape in New York, the big bad city. And then this, which makes it seem like, you know... As far as the show is concerned, a third of the time women just make up rape accusations because they're mad. And like, that's not even close to accurate. The false report rate is like 2%, not 33%. Fucking show. And is this episode really the one that you want to be doing the storyline in? Like, seriously, the female empowerment episode is the one where you make the girl look crazy and like making false reports just to ruin someone's life? Fuck you.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, they do a flashback. They do that flashback, which we heard part of from Laura's quote perspective, mm-hmm. where she's like, whatever, telling the story to convince herself, because that's not what we saw.
Right.
And not what we're supposed to think happened. We're supposed to take Steve's side. But like, there is a whole gray area of consent that where it's like, you know, if she was drunk and it wasn't entirely clear, it's not all cool, mm-hmm. which they could have explored, but it's 90210. So of course they're not going to, but I mean, I agree with you. It's like deeply messed up that they're not only not doing that with any nuance, but they're making the woman who sort of realizes that what happened to her was assault and not okay.
Right.
Crazy, so that none of that is true, and right. then just invalidating survivor stories. And it's like, why can't you unpack those two things?
Yeah,
like, store them separately, because your chocolate's getting in my date rape. Sorry.
Right. I mean, we never did see the seduction scene of Kelly or of Steve and Laura. Like, we all we see is like her flashback version, his flashback version, and then all the other stuff that happened around it. But like, you know,
when they were on the date.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. That's what I was going to say.
She was the one who was like, well, let's have another beer, whatever right. it was.
And, yes. Yeah. And then continued to like call him psychotically over and over and over again and would not take a no answer for an answer. So, you know, obviously at some point she was into whatever happened and wanted it to continue. And now, like, this is just her lashing out. But, like, ugh, anyway, let's go forward. We agree.
We agree that boo.
That this is gross. Sure enough, Kelly does go. Bless you.
Thank you. Sorry.
Speaking of gross, she does go and talk to Steve, who thinks that she's just grossed out by him for dumping Laura. Kelly asks how he could rape her. Steve thinks that is crazy. His version of events is very different, as we hear in clip 19.
Not like this girl could lie, Kelly. Or maybe she forgot to tell you about her major party personality. Man, everything out of her mouth was a come on. She wore this sexed up lingerie. It was hot. We got close. We danced over to the bed. And now it works. But the insane thing about it is I didn't even think we were going to go all the way until she pulls a condom out of her own purse. What is that? She was into it. Believe me, she was into it.
She had a condom. What is that? Like, she had a condom. She's a sexually active woman in the 90s. Like, what? Is that supposed to be accusatory? Like, you can't have, if you have a condom, that definitely means you're DTF? Like, yes and no. Anyway. Yeah. So Kelly tells Steve that Laura is going to call him out at the rally and that people will believe her. He asks if she believes him. She says she does, but that he's still in big trouble. And that's the other gross thing about this storyline is that they had to involve Steve so that, like, because he's in the gang, we're supposed to be on his side. But, like, do we think that Steve is maybe capable of pressuring a girl into having sex who doesn't want to? Yes. Like,
just being a bonehead and not
right.
reading the room in those situations where a girl is whatever, afraid and just decides I'll close my eyes and let this happen and get it over with. Like, yeah, that would totally be the Steve situation, mm-hmm, where he'd be like, what? She didn't say anything. Like, well,
right. I mean, the other part of this is like, he has a girlfriend that he cheated on with this girl that he had no intentions, yeah, of following through on. Like, he's already a dick, whether whatever, whoever else is right about this, you know, right in quotation,
yeah, like,
marks.
Sent entirely, yeah, aside, even if Laura were like, well, you know, thanks for throwing me a bone. See you around.
Yeah. He's
still cheated on Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
She bought you a cashmere coat, bro.
Yeah. Cashmere. Anyway, at the beach, David is pissy about continuing to cover Take Back the Night Week and trying to fob his obligations off on Donna, who quit the station, lest we forget. And he tells her why in clip 20.
All I've been hearing all week is how men are just slobbering sex fiends, and I'm tired of it.
Look, David, I know some of the girls may not have that much objectivity, but what they're talking about is real.
Yeah, it's real. Remember that woman who talked to us about having AIDS in high school? She's dead now. That's real.
What? Where did that come from?
Uh-huh.
I have no idea where that... How does he even know? Like, it's not like he had a Google News alert on this woman because it didn't exist then. But, like, it's not
that
like she
was delivered via passenger pigeon. Like, okay.
He got it on his beeper. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, he says he doesn't need any more reminders of how horrible things are in the world. And then he makes a joke about how his girlfriend won't sleep with him and Donna laughs. But it's like, men, the argument that men are slobbering sex fiends is borne out every week on the show in you, because you will not stop, even though you know what your girlfriend's intentions are. So whatever, dude, you need this more than anyone. Anyway, then Steve finds Laura on campus and unwisely confronts her one-on-one in clip 21.
Hey, I didn't do anything.
You're just lucky I'm not pressing criminal charges.
You can't press criminal charges because there was no rape. It was sex. That's all it was. Listen to me.
What are you going to do now? Throw me down? You want to beat me up?
You're handing me over to a lynch mob just because you got dumped?
Lynch mob? What do you think it was like with you?
Oh, was it so horrible? Is that why you agreed to meet me at the Peach Pit, Laura? Laura!
That was the end of that clip, was the one I thought, if your name is Laura and you want to tease that for your ringtone, Laura!
You really don't.
Dude, simmer down. Anyway.
Also, like, even if your story sincerely is that he assaulted you, mm-hmm, can we maybe not bring lynch mobs into it?
I mean, yeah,
like, having sex with you was like being strung up in a tree. No, Laura.
No.
This is a nice wide lane. You gotta stay in it, okay?
Seriously.
Oh, poor Laura.
Oh my God.
And I have to say, it's so sad. Like, Tracy Bindorf is so pretty, and she's actually quite good in this role. Like,
she is.
Back.
Yeah.
And she is very good at the, like, I'm enthusiastic. And then she just sort of tips it over a little bit, mm-hmm, into cuckoo pants.
Yep.
She's really good. And I feel like this was, like, Ever After. Every time I see her, I'm like, oh, it's Crazy Laura. Like, I'm always happy to see her, but she's always Crazy Laura.
It's true.
I'm sorry, Tracy Middendorf.
She was even in Boardwalk Empire, like, looking, by the way, exactly the same, even though it was 20 years later.
God.
She was the whatever her name was, who worked at the club. At,
yeah, Nucky's, she was like
club,
the cabaret.
Yeah.
God, she looked great.
She's so good. In the, like,
sickening.
In the man-styled, like, androgynous look, and then with, like, the curly 20s
hair. Oh, the Marcel wave. Yes.
So pretty.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of so pretty and so doomed, Celeste and Steve sit side by side in a booth.
Oh, God.
At the Peach Pit, because, again, I mean, I understand bringing her to a public place to break up with her or tell her this horrible news, but this place, when Matt knows you, like, and is already judging you because of the other girl you sent running out crying,
yeah,
the other
but
day. Yes.
Free breakup food.
Free breakup.
That's
free
true.
Free breakup
and
iced tea.
It saves you, like, everyone you know is there or will be there, and even if you're not there, Nat can fill them in. Very time-saving maneuver as far as the gossip chain goes. You don't have to tell the story. Wouldn't, Nat could just do it.
That's a great point.
Wouldn't the breakup dish be scrambled eggs? Not iced tea? Breaking eggs?
You know, I get someone, it. Iced right. tea is what they actually had, though. Right. It's a good one.
Right. The iced tea of sadness.
Yes. Right. So we join them when he is apparently just finished telling Celeste about Laura's imminent accusations and admits that he did sleep with her. Celeste cries, and when he tries to touch her, she cringes. I made a gif. And then She runs down all the other women that he was more interested in than her and how she tried to ignore it and that he doesn't really love her. Like he says, if he slept with someone else, a good point. He asks her not to leave him, but she does, and they never saw her again. Too bad,
because I did line like her. On the way out, though.
She does.
He's like, don't leave. She's like, I have to. Like, fuck yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. About time.
Someone asked.
And then in
dignity.
The background, you just hear, scrambled eggs, eggs, eggs.
Yeah.
I felt like I needed to put a cap on that.
She spells fuck off using some steak fries.
And then John Sears takes one on his way out the door. Steve then rants to Brandon about how dumb he was to take Celeste for granted. True. He guesses he will go to the rally and then shop for a new college because he assumes he's going to get kicked out. Brandon says he will meet him there. And at the rally, everyone marches and chants badly. Steve's pants are for sure already filled with terror shit, judging by his face, which you can see in the visual aids.
Terror shit.
His face, not his pants. For some reason.
He also is like smelling it, like he's just smelling the terror farts totally. Yeah.
For some reason, this march ends inside the student union. Great place for everyone to be gathered and yelling, but whatever.
Laura, and holding candles.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Laura is fueled by crazy adrenaline. I made a gif of that, too. You can see in the visual aids. John Sears and a bunch of keg dicks are also there to heckle because, of course, they are. Dan finds Andre and apologizes for their disagreement the day before, and she forgives him. Phew! Question mark. Then Steve thinks Kelly has ditched him, but she shows up and stands close to Laura so that Laura is very meanly framed in between Steve and Kelly. Angela calls Laura up to the mic, but when Laura freezes, Kelly takes the mic instead and tells her date rape story, which, as we know, ends with Steve being her hero and everyone applauds Steve. Laura, having been sold out, takes off, and Steve follows her and thanks her for not saying anything. He says again that he really is sorry, but for sleeping with her when he knew it was only going to be a one-night stand and she didn't. And he tells her she has a friend at Keg House, whatever the fuck that means, and then we hear this, our final clip.
Laura, you could have buried me tonight.
Yeah, well, I didn't have a choice. I didn't say yes. But I never said no.
But she said that...
I mean,
she told the ladies that she begged him to stop. Like, which is
and
true.
And tried
God.
To... Yeah.
Show! Speaking of getting this whole storyline... completely wrong. Dylan and Brenda stand in line for pie at Bake Back the night. Barf. John tries to smarm up to
really?
Kelly. Yes, Bake Back the night. Did you not notice that?
No.
That's what the pie stand is called, I swear to God. I didn't take a picture, but trust me, it's true. John tries to...
Why does this show hate us? I'm sorry.
We're so close to being done, Sarah. John Sears tries to smarm up to Kelly and win her back over by complimenting her public speaking, and then Dylan pies him in the face, and this display of male violence is the perfect way to cap off a Take Back the Night rally show. I know it's just pie, but like they then are almost come to blows and have to be pulled apart. Like, really? But of course,
it takes 8 people to subdue John Sears and his pied up face.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And of course, Kelly loves it because Kelly fucking loves the drama and she kisses Dylan. And the end. Let's wrap it up with our MVP. Donna?
Celeste.
Okay, yeah. Celeste and Donna, both good choices, I think.
Sure.
Least...
Wait, Donna, though? Because of the... Is having your purse stolen count?
No, not because of that, but because David is pissy and she tries to tell him that he's not wrong, or that he is wrong
fair.
About people, you know, talking about real shit, whether he understands it or not, you know.
Yes, true.
She also dimes out on him in her small group for how much he pressures her to have sex all the time, which she should be complaining about all the time for my money. Anyway, least valuable player. Well, leaving aside the writers who came up with this incredibly confused and ideologically irresponsible storyline, I'm going to say Steve.
Yeah. I'll go with Leslie Sumner.
Because...
Like, hi, I'm Leslie, and I'm here only to introduce this other person at our Take Back the Night daytime event. called Day Back the Day. I'm really glad this episode is over.
Yes. But let's back up to the extortion storyline so that we can do the Moo Moo Parker challenge. Five ways from this episode that Brandon could have ended up dead. Number one, he could have been in the path of Deshaun's remote control when he threw it and gotten a contusion, fallen down and died.
Deshaun could have chopped off his hand for touching the TV controls and he could have bled to death.
Brandon could have agreed to have sex with Lucinda on her kitchen table and her superior sex tips and techniques could have fucked him to death, potentially.
Oh, I was going to go with the table collapsed and he suffered internal bleeding, but that one's also good.
Killed by falling tribal mask from the dining room wall.
Oh yes, the Woody Woodpecker one could have flipped over and pecked him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Her food's too spicy.
Yeah, that makes five, right? There's five.
Yeah, sure.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl.
You shouldn't. It's our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book Shannon Doherty Exposed, still in the clubbing chapter. While she may not be into making out with women in public, Shando's interest is certainly piqued when it comes to fighting with them, whether it be Bonita Money at the Roxbury in December of 1992, or Kim Evans in Dallas in June of 1993. Miss Doherty and her cohorts just can't seem to keep their hands out of where they don't belong. As people I know, that's a weird way, out of? Anyway, as people cleverly pointed out, Doherty's law seems to be any bar or restaurant patron who can get into a fight with Shannon Doherty will. While on location for Blindfold, Judd Nelson, in italics, accidentally kicked Dallas lass Kim Evans in the face after she and those at her table had been badgering him about his faulty career under the watchful, though lopsided, eyes of his date, the Shan. Oh my God, so mean.
Wow.
So unnecessarily mean and accurate. As a memento of their date, Judge Woods charged with misdemeanor assault while poor Kim received medical treatment. This is really a problematic relationship on so many levels. The fact that they're just like sidebarring them, like, she really did have a tough life, you guys. She made a lot of bad choices. Anyway, that's the end of our excerpt for this week.
Next time on Again With This, more like City by the Bray, am I right? This road trip to San Francisco, Brandon rekindles his romance with floatophobe Emily Valentine. You know, that girl he called a psychopath and we quote, not 30 episodes ago. Anyway, back at the Keg House, protecting Rayanne Graff from the tumescent advances of one John Sears, but Steve's keg future in jeopardy. Don't care. Your corneas will be in jeopardy. You can check out our visual aids on our website at previously.tv, which you can follow on Twitter at previouslytv. You can also follow me and Tara on Twitter. My marvelous co-host, Tara Ariano, is at Tara Ariano, and I'm at Donation. Not to mention our fragrant producer, David T. Cole, who is on Instagram at Glark. See and smell you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beep.
Rudy, Rudy, Rudy.
Rooney.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.